Welcome to The Learning Curve, your industry podcast on all things on enterprise learning.
In this episode of The Learning Curve with me, Kenny, we're going to look at future skills, but this time from a little bit of a different perspective. We're going to be looking at soft skills or power skills in the age of AI. With me on the podcast this time will be the managing director of Growth Cave, Matthew, and he'll give us a little bit of insight on the topic from his experiences and his work at Growth Cave. So just tune into the episode and be prepared to get your edification game on. So, hello and welcome to another episode of The Learning Curve with me, Kenny. And today we have a very, 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 very interesting topic. And that's going to be the power of soft skills in the age of AI. I think that's going to be really interesting. And for that, I have an expert in that field, or somebody with a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. And that's Matthew, the managing director of Growth Cave, a human potential development company. And Matthew, could you share a little bit about yourself and the company Growth Cave?
Sure. Kenny, Growth Cave was started about 4 years ago. Prior to that, I'd been working in the human resources area for a number of years. I started off in the Defence Department, would you believe, in Australia.
Oh, okay.
And so I wasn't in uniform. I was actually
civilian contractor.
I was in the logistics area, believe it or not. So I was sort of working in military logistics, and then I ended up, as these things happen, I ended up in the training and development area. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we were doing, of course, was working with a mixed group of people in uniform and civilians, building, capability, giving them skills in management, leadership, interpersonal communications, self-management, those kinds of things. And then I left the public service some years ago and started my own registered business, and in doing the same sorts of stuff, doing a lot of workplace training and assessment, mm-hmm. went off to, decided, I might start a company in this, all of this. So that's really how Growth Cave came about. And since that time, I've been doing a lot of work in that area, but particularly, I'm very interested in how we can leverage off the sort of potential that human beings have to communicate, to interact, and that kind of stuff. So,
okay, well, that's a perfect thing. Then, how would you explain, or what does human potential mean in the context of your work?
Look, I think when you talk about human potential, I think it's always that thing of what is it that people are capable of that they're not currently doing. Mm-hmm. So I very much like that sort of term. I like the human potential term, because I think a lot of what we do as practitioners in the learning space is really to sort of acknowledge that, each of us has these tremendous potentialities in us, that haven't mm-hmm. been fleshed, that are there. And I've always found it, really unfortunate that so many people don't have that opportunity, to unleash that potential,
Okay.
Kinds of things. Yeah.
So your point is to unlock their potential, then, so to say.
Very much so. Yeah. And sometimes make them aware of what they're capable of too. I think that we're in that game of trying to encourage people to really stop and say, I can gain so much more if I'm prepared mm-hmm. to learn more. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, from the inception of your company to now, how would you say that you've developed? So we have the growth of the human, but how has your company developed to face the challenges of today?
Well, I think a lot of it has been really acknowledging that the way that we've been doing things in the past wasn't working. Mm-hmm. I've been privy to working within large organizations and companies, and seeing mm-hmm. how we haven't really been focusing enough attention, and it's it's a bit of a sort of a cliche. We all know that these soft skills and power skills that we're going to talk about are so important, mm-hmm. but it's like we haven't really been focusing on them as being things that we can really leverage off to make a difference now. And I guess that's where my sort of development in this field has started, because I've been seeing this in organizations where there's so much potential that we could be gaining if we're actually getting the power skills more sort of front and center, and actually making leadership understand what they can do to encourage it as well, and get involved in that. Yeah.
Well, today, it's hard not to jump ahead and jump right into the topic of the meat of this whole thing. So we still have to prep it a little bit tenderize the listener a little bit and get them really prepped for this whole thing. But we're heading into the age of AI, or, you know, one could, you know, arguably say we're there already. So we're, I think, you know, a couple of years, it might have been a little bit abstract for people, you know, terms of science fiction or whatever. Now you see the actual application, you know, through ChatGTP and other things. Yeah. What transformations have you witnessed in individuals and organizations in navigating the challenges of the digital age?
Look, I think
AI being the pinnacle now, so that there's a journey there too.
Yeah, look, I think we tend to sort of look at it all, you know, we think, oh, AI and automation and robotics and stuff like
that. Yeah, it's like,
And we have this kind of sense of that all of a sudden everything's just going to be shiny and modern, and we're all going to be doing things incredibly efficiently and differently and in a more interesting way. That's the positive side of it. But I think we need to acknowledge also that there's that other aspect of that, you know, concern about what all this means.
And there's fear concern. I mean, between Elon Musk and everything, you're definitely thinking, everybody watched Terminator, they're thinking Skynet, so that's another thing everybody's thinking of.
That's right. And look, I think the thing that I've probably noticed more than anything, and this has been part of my journey and something that's really made me think about it, is we've tended to just see, AI, we've got to get this, we've got to get this and this, you know, and if we get these things, this is going to be fantastic and all of our problems are going to be solved. And look, you can understand from a company's point of view or an organization's point of view, they all want to perform better. They all want to be more efficient. They want to be able to operate in their markets and, you know, against their competitors and that kind of thing. But I think that the thing that I've noticed is that very often when, as with a lot of innovation, let's be honest about it, we don't often think these things through well enough in terms of what that means for the people that are going to be using it, the people that are going to be interacting with it. And you know, are we missing something by not doing that? Could it be even better if we actually considered that sort of person side of it at the same time?
Okay.
That's one of the things that I particularly noticed about it. Yeah.
Okay. So let's get to one of the things that's probably up in everybody's. Let's get let's jump over the first real hurdle. And the first real hurdle is what probably everybody wants to know is, since AI is so rapidly changing the world, I already alluded to it with Skynet. Some people, you know, fear, you know, job losses, while others, you know, see the possibility of the creation of new roles. From your perspective, will AI replace jobs, create jobs, or both? So I guess what everybody wants to hear is that AI won't take your job. That's what the outcome of this answer should be. Let me just pitch that out to you. So, but go ahead, please.
Is your job going to be terminated? Pardon.
Yeah.
Since you're talking about Skynet. Look, I think, I am by nature an optimist, and so I probably should put that out there. You know, I tend to have a positive slant on things. I know that recently the World Economic Forum actually made a comment that they were expecting in the next couple of years, there was going to be 300 million jobs worldwide that were going to be affected by the introduction of AI and robotics. That was one of them. Now, you know, that's a big picture. But they also, in the same breath, they talked about they believe there'll be something like 97 million new roles emerge as a result of AI, innovation and robotics. And I think it's important to keep some perspective with this because, you know, I like to give people the example of drones. Okay, have a look at how disruptive drones have been. Okay, in terms of what they can now do, You know, and we see the dark side of that if we look at the war in the Ukraine, you know, with drones being used in war and everything. But look at the other side of what drones are doing now as well and the areas they're operating in. But there are a lot of areas of work that have emerged as a result of drones that never existed before. You know, so, we always tend to think of what's going to be replaced, who's going to be lose a job for them, but what about the jobs we're going to gain from them? You know, there's whole jobs out there that never existed 10 years ago.
I guess maybe it's that inherent fear that everyone has, you know, like when Ford invented, you know, the assembly line, everybody was, you know, afraid of that. So I guess it doesn't help to have, you know, various science fiction movies, you know, that are dedicated to basically making AI the scourge of humankind. I guess that doesn't help much in pitching the whole thing. But so overall, you would say you're optimistic on...
I am optimistic.
Okay.
I think we're obviously heading in new directions with it all. And it doesn't mean to say that we don't need to be proactive about thinking what do we need to do to help people with those new roles or consider what that means, you know, for us broadly. But I always see these things as creating new opportunities.
Yeah. Okay. So you've alluded to it a little bit, but how might the new roles in the age of AI differ from traditional ones? What do you see there?
I see already a lot of traditional roles. Even, let's just use the clerical area, for example. You know, there are a lot of roles that would have existed that no longer will exist simply because they don't need to exist because AI can do them quickly. Okay. So if you think of things that required, and you know, a lot of these roles have been disappearing anyway. You know, if you think about the areas where you've got to check through things repetitiously, or you know, even you've got to write simple things for people. Or even, you know, you've got to interact with someone on a very basic level, then sure, those kinds of roles are going to disappear. There's no question about that. So what does that mean for people that are working there? What it means is that the emphasis needs to be more and more on what people, on the things that AI and robotics can't do very well.
But will you be able to shift? I mean, that, you know, sometimes we kind of gloss over it and we say, you know, there are new roles and so forth. But we all know that individuals hate change. So I'm just thinking of like how much of a possibility. And also, it depends on what stage you are in your career. How do you think that there will be mechanisms there to facilitate that change? I'm thinking of, as a classic example, when I do a lot of, since I'm bilingual and I live in Germany and work with a lot of English, one of the first applications I had for AI was actually translation. Sure. And looking at how well that worked, you know, it came to my mind, you know, right away, well, this means that a whole bunch of translators are going to lose their job. And then you see, you know, the advance in your cell phones with the ability to, you know, directly translate speech to text and pictures to text. And the other day I was at a gas station and it was one of the 24-hour card operated gas stations. And this guy came to me, and I think he was either, let's say, Polish or Russian. And he typed in a text in Google Translate in Russian, and then held the phone out to me, and then it typed the text out in German. He's like, how do I operate this thing? And then I got to ready to answer. He's like, 1 second. Then he held the microphone up, and I answered, and, you know, did dictation, and then, you know, did it and everything. So I was pretty... I was like, wow, you know, real world application. So how do you think we're going to facilitate this change for those individuals that, you know, might lose their job?
I think that there's no point trying to just say that, you know, we can keep on doing those things that AI can do easily. Okay, so, I mean, I think you're basically burying your head in the sand if you do, because the reality is that markets will say and companies will say, well, we just have to adopt this because our competitors are adopting or whatever. I think the bigger question is going to be understanding that where those other opportunities are going to open up, whether it's because of the new technology creating opportunities in other areas, you know, or whether it's simply because those areas where AI doesn't handle this well. For example, this kind of a discussion that you're doing now, mm-hmm. you know, how well would AI handle something like this? If you weren't real, I'm assuming you're real, Kenny. I don't.
Yes, I can pinch myself, but that doesn't help.
Look, the reality is, and this is a big question for us, because I personally don't think that we're doing enough in that regard. You know, I think I'm optimistic about the opportunities, but I think we need to be doing more to actually identify them and prepare people for them. And, okay. and this is why I talk about the power skills that are beyond technical skills, you know, like
okay.
this is where I think this sort of stuff's
important. Yeah. Well, then we'll almost jump into the meat of our discussion. And you mentioned power skills, but before that, let me mention another topic that maybe this might be a little bit hard to define in one simple sentence. But we talk about future skills, and we also talk about the demand for future skills is evolving, and there will be a demand for future skills. Could you define, or what in your opinion, or by best definition, can one consider to be future skills?
Well, look, I think future skills are those skills that enable you to leverage off all of the change that's taken place. Okay. So, you know, for me, if you think about, and again, I just use, you know, AI and robotics as just as examples. There's mm-hmm. a lot of other things that are happening out there, but let's just use those as examples. Mm-hmm. To me, future skills aren't just about the technical know-how to use AI and to use robotics. It's mm-hmm. all. It's also the other skills that you need to sort of assimilate that into the other things that you're doing in life and work, and really okay. use those things to actually maximize, you know, the potential of your organization or whatever it might be. I think okay. that's where future skills really come in. I think we get very, very hung up on the fact that everyone needs to be a coder and all that sort of stuff. I don't believe that's the case. I actually think that there are some really great jobs in the future for people that don't know coding, actually.
that brings me the perfect segue, because you were leading up to a question that I was going to ask, because oftentimes when we go into this discussion of future skills, I think oftentimes we overlook some of the basic and essential vocational skills, you know, such as, you know, building skills, carpentry, and so forth and so on. And there was an interesting thing in Germany. They recently did a review of, due to the energy crisis, they went through this whole thing that they wanted to get, they passed a couple laws that they want to get, Germany to be more energy efficient. So they mandated the replacement of old heating units to new heating units and so forth and so on. And one of the most popular things that came out is, I don't know what it's called in English, but basically it's a heat transfer module. It works off of ambient air temperature, I think.
Heat exchange, probably, or something. Yeah,
heat exchange. What do you use in Australia primarily?
For heating, or
For heating.
It's mostly. Look, it depends. I mean, some people have gas central heating, or just have an electric.
Well, in Germany, oil and gas has been like the focus, I think. So they moved over to this heat exchange, and everybody bought heat exchangers. And there was discussion about that. And a guy said, you know, heat exchangers are nice and good, but they're extremely technically complex machines. And he said, in 10 years, at the rate we're going, there's not going to be any vocational people to even repair those things, you know. So sometimes I think, and that's the point that I was making or trying to make, is that we lose focus on, when we say future skills, everybody automatically thinks, you know, how will I use AI? How will I do that? But where do vocational skills fit in for you?
Yeah.
Yes,
absolutely. Look, I think that the capacity to, on very basic levels, to be able to do the sorts of things that you've mentioned are not disappearing. And, you know, remember, there are a lot of things where, I mean, we've seen the way robotics has developed in certain areas and it can do certain things. But, I've seen examples of robots building houses and things like that. And mm-hmm. I see all that kind of stuff. But there are a number of other factors that come into all of this too. One of them is economics. One of them is practicality. One of them is just whether people were actually comfortable with that anyway. And whether it's feasible at scale, you know, for different things. You know, I'm in the process of getting my house renovated. Is that the sort of, what's nearly done, you know? Uh-huh. Is that the sort of thing that I would be necessarily wanting robots to do? Is that even the desirable thing? Is it even practical? So I think that there's always going to be absolutely areas where we need to retain that sort of almost craft type approach where mm-hmm. people have that capacity at the same time. And yes, you don't want everything to just be all of a sudden no one knows how to put up a house frame anymore. That could be very interesting, couldn't it?
Okay.
And you know, look, I mean, of course, even then you still need people that appreciate and understand what a robot would need to do to put up a house frame.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
we're getting away from that in a hurry, yeah.
So we've defined future skills to the best of our ability, and I think the listeners will now have a better idea of what that is. And yep. let's swing back to the AI focus. Yep. So AI, you know, excels in efficiency. That's what we, you know, all say. But soft skills or power skills bring a unique human touch. You already alluded to it, power skills. So yeah. Maybe here, can you give us an example between the difference of power skills versus soft skills? Because quite frankly, to be honest, I don't know the difference myself.
Well, so. I suppose, if you come down to the semantics of it, I mean, soft skills are the core skills that we need to operate as human beings, basically, mm-hmm. particularly with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think our skills would be those soft skills, but particularly where we can use them in these kind of work environments that we've been discussing. Okay. You know, so what's the extension of essentially, you know, a soft skill is the core. A power skill is an extension of that soft skill in the context of being able to leverage off things in the workplace more effectively.
Yeah. Would you have a mundane example that you
could make? Well, one I could give you straight away would be something like critical thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, we do that all the time, mm-hmm. you know, day to day, but we don't perhaps do it as well as we should. And the reason that I mention that in the context of AI is that if mm-hmm. you think, or technology, if you think now about the massive amounts of information that you're being bombarded with, okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Kenny, you might be day-to-day, you might use critical skills. You might go out shopping and you know, try and decide what suit to buy and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're using your critical skills there. Okay. But imagine you're in the work context and all of a sudden you're being assailed by all sorts of information, mm-hmm. Which just seems to be created out of thin air, let's face it. We all experience that now. That would be an example of using critical thinking at that level of being mm-hmm. able to really practically discern what you need, what's real, what's not, is a really important capability. And I think that would be an example of one particular power skill that we absolutely have to be using more with mm-hmm. AI and things like that. Oh, it's just so important.
Okay. So inherently, there's, like you said, there's no semantically you can separate the two, but in essence, a soft skill or a power skill are the same. Just the power skill is a more specifically defined application thereof or direction.
I think so. To a work thing. I mean, you know, look, I look at stuff, you know, with you know, look at all the different media that we have to deal with now. Mm-hmm. And look at, you know, the stuff that you're getting day to day in terms of information. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're hearing about this now with AI in particular with fake, you know, the fake stuff mm-hmm. and the things that are happening now with AI. And you know, are we talking about an arms race in terms of things that can check whether something's fake? Yeah, so if someone suddenly sees you, I suddenly see Kenny, mm-hmm. Kenny doing a touchdown in the, you know, at the World Series or something like that. Do I know that that's real or do I know that that's fake? And that's actually really important because we have to be able to make those decisions. And who's going to make that decision? Do we want to be doing that ourselves or do we want a machine to do that for us?
Okay. So having identified, you know, soft skills and power skills, albeit, you know, a little bit semantic, how do power skills align with future requirements? How do you see that?
Well, look, I usually talk about five main areas that I think in terms of the future is 100% what we need from a power skills point of view. So I've mentioned critical thinking, and I put it in the context of all the things that we need to decide between, you know, as digital, whatever you want to call it. Say digital natives. Apparently I'm too old to be a digital native.
Don't you just have to – wait, you're in Australia, so if you pick up your laptop and head to the beach, then you would be a digital native, right?
Is that it? So will I just grow younger by 30 years if I do that? That sounds great. some of the others that I – well, the others that I'd mentioned in addition to critical thinking, I think
– Just to prep our listeners here, you're going to now mention what you consider the five –
what I believe areas,
five power skills or
five power skills. Yeah.
Okay, so everybody can earmark this on their when listening, so you can scroll back to this. Here come the five what Matthew believes are the five power skills. So
critical thinking. I've already mentioned that, and I think that's powerful simply because we have to be able to discern between things. Okay, mm-hmm. We have to be able to do that. Is AI going to do that for you? Partially, perhaps, but not completely. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have that capability to discern things and to actually make decisions and be able to, decide. So that's a really critical part of this. So that's the first one. The second one is creativity, Kenny. Mm-hmm. It's actually being able to, come up with ideas. And, mm-hmm. and you know, this is not – we can't let ourselves get lazy in the sense that we'll just let AI make all the ideas for us, because as we've seen, it will only do with what it's got.
Yes.
Okay. We're talking about new stuff. We're talking about new ideas, and being creative. And I think that's a really, really important part of being relevant and being marketable in that new digital age.
Not to dive off into a rabbit hole too quick, isn't that also where that inherent fear of AI comes from? Is that the belief currently that humans can be creative versus AI not being creative? I mean, that's one of the fears, is that, you know, once it becomes to a point where it's actually creative, you know, or it can, let's say, for the better part of it, you know, just for a part of discussion here, that it can actually think for itself, you know, that's where it gets scary. So,
Oh, look, of course. And look, there are obviously, I mean, I see things on Twitter, people are putting pictures of, you know, they'll just ask AI to create a picture for them. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a girl on a train traveling. I saw one the other day, young girl on train traveling through Swiss Alps or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what it does. It just creates a composite from what it knows, and mm-hmm. there it is. But it always creates it from what it knows. And I think the thing to keep in mind is that creativity is also about new stuff.
The original idea.
Yeah, it's original ideas. And so I think that in that environment, I think creativity is something that employers in the future are really going to be looking for, because we still want people to be out on the edge in terms of their thinking.
Thinking outside the box. I mean, that's okay. So that's one of the things that I guess you're right. That's I think I would sign up for that. I think that's one of the things that that AI I can't picture it doing is thinking outside the box, coming up with, to quote Star Trek or something, you know, coming up with an illogical solution. So
I find a lot of, so far what I've seen of AI generated stuff. Mm-hmm. Is very derivative, it's very it seems to be it's using what it's got, mm-hmm. but as human beings we've got more than what it's got. We've actually got the capacity to build that creativity ourselves, we actually have that within us, and that's why I believe it's a power skill. I think it's something that really, really strongly defines us.
Well, thanks for indulging my little dive into a rabbit hole there for on that topic. So we have critical thinking and creativity, and what would then be the third one?
Collaboration.
Okay.
Yeah. And in particular, the interesting thing about all of the stuff with AI is that we've got such extraordinary ways now to collaborate. You know, if you look at the ways that we can talk to each other, and you know, particularly if we go back to COVID, and you know, the ability to, you know, with platforms like this, and you know, Zoom and Teams and things, and you know, undoubtedly saved a lot of people. You know, there's no question about that. No question. Mm-hmm. And I think that but at the end of the day, it's still about the capacity to collaborate with each other and to cooperate and to work together. And, you know, this is where we get some of the stuff on Teams as well. And that's really critical, because we're not doing away with the need. If you're in an office with lots of AI and I'm in an office with lots of AI and you and I need to come up with some deal or something, we still have to have very, very strong collaborative skills in addition to all the other stuff that we've got. You know, like AI is not going to say, Kenny, I now want you to say the following to Matthew. Maybe it will, but would you feel comfortable with that? And I suppose that's the point that I would be making there. So I think this is why I believe the collaboration side is so significant, because we have to be able to really close that loop, you know, like in terms of cooperation and teamwork and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it does seem to be the natural extension of the two previous things you mentioned, you know, critical thinking and what was the second one again?
Creativity.
So collaboration, you know, would be the natural extension of that. Okay. So then let's move on to number four.
Number four is adaptability. I suppose... look, again, this is a little bit more of a kind of an attitude thing as well as a skill, if you like. But I think there are certain things that we can learn and acquire which enables us to adapt more effectively to the sorts of changes that AI is bringing in.
Okay.
And look, I would add to that that if you're really worried, if you're continually worrying about AI, then you're not sort of thinking about what else could I be doing, should I be doing in the face of AI?
Okay. So you're wasting your time basically thinking, worrying about something rather than actively doing something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And it's one of those things, it's a bit like that, you know, that old thing they say, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do next. You know,
it's what you make out of it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. AI has happened to us. There's no putting it back in the box now. You know, it's here. The question is, what do we do from this point to continue to make ourselves relevant, useful, and all those kinds of things. And that's where the capacity to actually weather change but also harness change. You know, if you'd found your job, if you were put out of work by a drone, you know, let's say you were a postman or something, and the drone started delivering letters and stuff like that. I don't know if that's going to happen, but just for argument's sake.
Well, Amazon wanted to do that, deliver packages by drone drop-off, so that wasn't too far off.
Yeah, and I mean, people don't really write letters anymore, so I suppose the only things that are going to be delivered is parcels probably anyway. But let's say that does happen. Your attitude, if you were disrupted by that, you know, if you're in an industry that was disrupted by that, what could you actually do to benefit from that change, from all those things that were happening? You know, what are the other opportunities that are opening up here for you?
Okay, but now I have to jump back to the beginning of our conversation, because if your power skill is adaptability, then I would venture to ask the question, though, as I had in the beginning, whose responsibility is it? Now that you say adaptability is in your example, you know, you mentioned the drone and so forth, then it is the responsibility of the individual. But earlier, we also gave an indication it should be also part of the responsibility of governments and so forth to give opportunity to create opportunities for people that need to change.
Look, I agree. I think it's a two-way street. Like, I'm a big believer in people taking responsibility, you know, and accepting some personal responsibility.
Well, you're Australian, so I mean, you guys are that's your motto, isn't it? To take responsibility.
For some of us. Yeah, look, I'd like to think that, but you know, it's like taking responsibility I guess to look and see what the opportunities are and what else you can do. But look, let's be honest, Kenny. I mean, on a bigger picture, on say a national level or something like that, you know, I think governments and big companies that need to be mindful of this too. I think we need to look at what are the opportunities for people. You know, look, I'll give you an example. I mean, a lot of large organisations have people who could be disrupted, you know, in one area, of their company. And very often what companies do is they don't think about potentially those people could be developed to work in other areas. They'll often just go out to the market and say, let's get some new people. So I think in that sort of an instance, it would be better if we're actually saying, sure, those people need to be willing to actually retrain and do new things. But I think the organisation also needs to identify the opportunity it's got itself to actually use those people, because we've got a worldwide skill shortage, and it's continuing.
That's true. Okay, so then let's get to the next one. Adaptability, and then the next one would be.
And the fifth one is emotional intelligence.
What was that?
Emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence. Boy, now you've really kicked me off on a rabbit hole, because
I can see that's a wombat hole, not a rabbit hole.
Okay, a wombat hole. Let me just get back to a point. Just short excursion on a thing. I follow American football, and I follow the Philadelphia Eagles. And one of the things, they had problems with their coaching at some point, and they fired one coach, and basically the next coach they hired on the basis of saying that he needed emotional intelligence. So he went along to win the Super Bowls, which is good. So I guess they were right. But so now I'm interested. So I guess the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, to sum it up, did have one of your power skills, which is emotional intelligence. So now I'm curious for your definition thereof.
Yeah, well, look. Essentially, I mean, emotional intelligence is really all about an awareness both of our own emotional state, what that means in terms of the way we communicate with other people, and also other people's emotional state and what those things mean. Okay, in terms of our interactions and how successfully we deal with each other. And the reason I say that is because ultimately, with all of the AI in the world, people still want to deal with people. It's not going to change. You know, you find this even now in terms of, you know, we've had pushback in some places around the world against automated AI type, record, you know, not just where it's being outsourced to another country. You know, you've got call centers and that. They've been trying to replace that with some really basic AI type, speaking. And people don't like it. Like, people actually like talking to a person.
Okay.
If you're interacting with another human being, then it's critical for you to have good emotional intelligence so you can actually transact that interaction really well, you know, that you can get the things that you need through that discussion.
Yeah. Okay, now, emotional intelligence. Sometimes I find it sometimes problematic, because we often use words in different settings. And let me take this topic of emotional intelligence out a little bit, because I think here, how should I put this? All right. Per what you just said, the emotional intelligence is how you being aware of oneself and being aware of other people's emotions. So isn't that something, though, that also we have as a society, there's been a certain change, given how back in the day, you know, one of the things that you would probably say, or one of the emotional intelligence was different in the sense that people may have suppressed their feelings or basically not acknowledged other people's feelings. So, you know, with sayings like, you know, do as I say and not as I do, right? You know, something like that.
I'm very familiar with that concept from my days in the public service, actually.
Yeah, so how does that, is that then, if that is a power skill, is that something that also is a change from society, that people, you know, become more aware of themselves and their needs, or where does that fit in?
Look, I think it is. I mean, I think one of the things that's important in communication generally is authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and this is, again, you're getting into areas which are quite distinct from AI, for example. You know, okay. You're talking about people interacting with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that sense of connection that we get. Because mm-hmm. we're physical creatures, but we're also emotional creatures. Mm-hmm. And you know, so our kind of our interactions are always going to be underlined by this sort of thing. I think that the point you're making, I think that there has been a change. I think there is more of an acknowledgement now about the need. And I've seen this a lot in leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen this particularly strongly put forward in leadership. I think there is now very much a sense that in our dealings with each other, we do need to come across as authentic. We do mm-hmm. need to come across as empathetic and understanding other people. Okay. And also, you know, acknowledging the impact that certain things are having on us and what that then means in terms of the way that we behave. Okay. And I suppose the reason I say it's a power skill is because it's something that's always going to be there in terms of our interactions with each other.
Okay, let me ask the question in a different case then, or let me ask another question. Do you think that is it essential to have all the five skills or is it essential to, if you want, okay, let me ask this way. If you want to be successful.
Yep.
Do you need all five of those skills to be successful? Would you be more successful if you had those five skills? Or is it enough to be focused on one of the skills and being, you know, an expert in with one of those skills?
I personally believe that all five of them you should be using.
So balanced, okay.
Yeah, balanced. I mean, you're obviously not going to be using them all the time. I mean, your emotional mm-hmm. intelligence is probably going to be, probably the emotional intelligence and collaboration are the ones you use the most mm-hmm. because that's just by dint of the fact that you're dealing with other people and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But they're all important. You know, they're all going to be things which you're going to need to use more mm-hmm. to distinguish yourself and your unique abilities in this age of machines doing lots and lots of other things.
Okay. Like
I think that's where it really becomes significant, you know, for people in a workplace.
Okay. So that, yeah. Well, okay, then that would lead me to next question. So in terms of industries or job profiles, for whom do you see these power skills as most essential, and how do they contribute to the success of these individuals or industries?
Yeah, look, I think they're important for everyone. I did some work a couple of years ago for a company that wrote code for games. Mm-hmm. And I was asked specifically to go in there and do this because what had happened was we had some very, very technically competent people uh-huh. who were very good at what they did. They were good at crunching code for games, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm not a code person. I mean, I'm just, you know, I won't go into my computer programming career, but you don't want to know about it. But the thing that was interesting there was that when I went and did this work, and I guess we were to a certain extent really covering those five power skill areas that I've talked about. You know, that was one of the things that was in our, mm-hmm. you know, I did it like a two-day program for them to sort of make them aware and give them some examples of what they could do. Mm-hmm. But I think it's less important the actual industry or what people are doing. I think what's more important is that people understand that in addition to your technical competency, and in this mm-hmm. case, these people, it was crunching code. Okay, mm-hmm. that's what they were good at. Beyond that, management was looking for people who could bring together these other power skills and mm-hmm. really make a difference in terms of the sorts of outcomes they were getting with new products and that kind of thing. And okay. it was actually quite interesting because this was a highly digitized environment. You know, like mm-hmm. you can imagine what it was like. Everyone was so technically competent. I felt like I'd stepped out of the 19th century when I went in there. And I was scared to even show them my phone because I didn't have all the apps that I should, and they were telling me what I should put on my phone, all this sort of stuff. And what, you mean you don't Bluetooth that? You know, I was getting these sorts of And I suppose that, but the thing that struck me, and this was one of the reasons I was there working, I suppose, was, it was, you know, I was there just saying to them, I don't have that technical competency, and it's great that you have it. But the other side of this coin with these power skills, irrespective of the industry that you're in, the other side of the coin is these power skills, which makes such a difference on top of what you're already doing. And guess what? In most cases, they're things that are not easily replaced by machines and by AI.
Okay. Let me, before diving on the AI thing, though, would you generally, from listening to you now, we've identified five power skills. Would you say that when you go in and, as in the case of the engineers, do you then go in and evaluate where these individuals are in each of these skills, and then you try to increase one of the five skills to make it better? So let's say, let's say that they're extremely, as a coder, you're extremely creative on how you code and so forth and so on, but you might be lacking it on the collaborative skill. So is that where you would then set your focus to say, okay, in order to make these individuals more efficient or better, then that's the skill I would focus on to increase that a little bit?
You could do that. I mean, in the example that I gave you of the game company, they had already identified what they believed were the areas that needed to be focused on. So there was a particular emphasis there on the emotional intelligence and on the collaboration, because they felt that what was missing was they were good at their coding, but they weren't good at then discussing their coding with someone else or sort of, you know, assimilating their efforts with someone else, and this is an issue for their management and that as well. So I think it really depends. I mean, you know, that the five of those things are pretty broad brush, and they're all important. But what you will find in different organisations, there may be symptoms of areas where they're lacking in one area as opposed to another area, and that's part of what you do with your training needs analysis. If you want to go down that kind of path, you know, you've got to come in and observe and talk and find out what people appear to be, you know, not covering.
Okay. Would you say is there also then, we've identified that, would you say there's also a distinction between that and leadership? So specifically, would you say that there is a specific set of power skills that you would consider more important for leadership roles individuals in such roles, management roles?
Yeah, look, I think that those are all important for leadership as well. You know, so I think those power skills are still very important for a leader. I think the thing that I would probably say from a leadership point as well is the other thing that they actually have to have is they have to have a sense of future, a sense of vision, a sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think that needs to be intertwined with the application of those power skills. And, you know, the thing that I see missing in a lot of leadership is the lack of understanding where we're actually taking people and why we're taking them there. Which seems unusual, but a lot of leaders seem to be focused on the kind of nuts and bolts of running things, and running things is not taking people somewhere.
Okay. You
know? Running things is just running things. Okay. Taking people somewhere is actually saying the reason we're doing this is because I want to be over here.
Okay.
And those power skills are an incredibly important part of that too. But I believe that vision side for the leadership is really, really important, especially when you're talking about change and digitization and that kind of thing. You know, what are we going to do with AI in 5 years' time?
Yeah, that's a very good point. So, so taking us back to the original part, the power of soft skills in the AI age. So, you've identified five power skills which you believe will set us apart from AI, or would you say it would in general help us navigate the challenges of AI? Where do you see that? I mean, when we talked about it, I would say when identifying those five power skills, I would say, okay, this is like, like a USP for humans, in essence, that we're creative, that we're collaborative, and so forth. So that sets us apart. So that would would you say these power skills are what give us the distinctive edge in navigating the AI?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I guess it's not just about sort of using them to try and survive in the face of AI. I mean, I come back to the old leverage thing. I mentioned that at the start of our chat. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, the word leverage is so important here, because what we're actually doing ultimately is what we're wanting to do is utilize those power skills to mm-hmm. actually be able to better leverage off the AI and all the technology that we've got.
Okay.
So how can we actually then, how can I as an individual in a new role actually use all of these amazing things, but mm-hmm. at the same time by really emphasizing these power skills too, you know, like really being able to bring that to the fore. And look, that could be, it could be something to do with, you know, I've got these amazing ways of getting information from people. Mm-hmm. And I've never been able to do this myself. AI has done it for me. But mm-hmm. the critical thinking is I have to make this decision now.
Okay. You know,
and my critical thinking skills are the thing that's going to matter. And AI is not going to help me with that. Okay. AI is giving me all the information, but I could probably ask it for an answer, but is mm-hmm. that really what I want to do? Do I really feel comfortable with that?
Okay.
Yeah. You've got to be able to step beyond that. Yeah.
Okay. But would you say what is in your feeling, what is the awareness of companies to this? So, you know, everybody is, you know, so scared about, you know, the upcoming AI and what will happen yep. and so forth and so on. So, yep. we've now identified, you know, 5 power skills, which we say make you unique and still give you the possibility to be more efficient or, you know, persist in the face of AI. But how aware are companies of this? How does that influence their learning departments? How does it influence their HR? Is that a topic that you've seen companies address or look into?
Yeah, look, some do, Kenny. I mean, I think as with everything, there's a real variation. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of it comes back to the individual ethos of the companies too. Mm-hmm. So I think some companies are actually quite empowered to think about what this all means for our people and how we can actually use our people more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Not in the first instance, how many people can we get rid of? Mm-hmm. And there are some companies like that. I mean, there's no question. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some companies that will just look at this purely as a nuts and bolts exercise. How can I replace X number of people mm-hmm. and just put AI in? Mm-hmm. And you know, they're obviously not going to be interested in this conversation. But I think for a lot of companies and for a lot of governments and administrations as well, I think there is a real desire to understand how we can better utilize people in the face of all of this AI. You know, what does it mean for us? And you know, what are the opportunities to, you know, we're talking about, we used to be here, now we're at this next level with AI, but what do our people need to do to get us to that, even that level there? That okay. AI can't do. You know, what is it people can do to take us there? I think that's okay. what's real.
So some of our listeners might be, you know, also from, you know, the HR or learning development or even management individuals that are listening. So yep. what, for them, what would you say, how do you think organizations on an organizational level, how can organizations develop power skills? And what training programs have you found to be particularly effective in fostering those power skills? That would be, I think, a real good information for individuals listening.
Yeah, look, I think the it's been very variable in terms of what organizations that I've observed, what they've done. And look, there's obviously a lot of applications in terms of things like, you know, even work-based learning and stuff like that, mm-hmm. where, you know, where we're using different sorts of systems and things to actually be able to learn online and, you know, distance learning and that kind of thing. I think that the point I would make is that I think organisations need to understand what they actually are wanting people to be able to do in the future that can assist them and boost their capabilities. Now, in terms of, you know, specific programs, you know, look, there are a lot of different kinds of people in the market out there offering training in all of these power skills, really. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think the thing that's particularly important, and this is where I think the organisations themselves need better kind of awareness. You know, mm-hmm. the HR departments need a better appreciation and understanding of this idea of being able to better utilise people for all of the new roles. You know, okay. that's not just about going out and employing people. If you've got a skills shortage, what have we already got that we can work with here, and what can we be doing internally to help those people, or who could come in from outside and actually help us with that? I think that's
the question. So almost you could say then it would be you could almost say here it comes. You could almost say that organizations need emotional awareness. In the sense that they need to be aware of themselves and have their sense of directions. And the better it is defined for the organization as a whole, let's say if an organization could have emotional awareness, which would be a power skill, then they would be able to apply those then better. Is that,
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I've dealt with a lot of companies that have been very focused on, I mentioned at the start, you know, about, oh, here's the new tech. Mm-hmm. Let's get the new tech. Everything's going to be great. Now, apart from the obvious issues of change, you know, managing change and that, mm-hmm. we often don't think about what else can we be doing as part of getting that new tech with the people that we've already got.
Okay.
You know, and you know, I might be talking here about someone that used to work in the mailroom, Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't consider – a lot of the people that we should be considering, mm-hmm. we don't. But it's a matter of retraining those people and utilizing what we've got within the organization. You know, so I'm a big believer in that kind of attitudinal change within organizations too.
Okay, so in order to have power skills be an effective tool in leveraging, you know, the efficacy of your employees, the organization itself needs to be aware of this. Needs to, in that sense, have its own power skill developed in the sense of emotional awareness of where it wants to be and what it wants to do, which puts up that's going to be really interesting to see how organizations can actually do that, or if they will in the future. So have you been in a role where you help organizations to make these evaluations?
I've certainly done work, trying to build awareness mm-hmm. with some different clients, and particularly in these areas. Mm-hmm. And it's an evolving thing, because a lot of people, it's trying to get the idea across that it's not just about tech. It's mm-hmm. not just about having people that can code or that can, you know, use a robot or whatever the case may be. You know, it goes way beyond that. It talks about what else do the people that we need have to be able to do to be even more efficient with that, you know, to get even better results out of AI. It's like anything, you know. It's like if you think of any using a computer. I mean, what percentage we use of our computer, of our laptop, for example. Mm-hmm. For most people, it's probably only a few percent if you're really honest about it.
Okay.
And that might be a technical gap, but what I'm saying is there's a people gap too. There's a gap in terms of all the other things that we could be utilising our people for, in terms of these power skills, which added to the new tech and all the innovation and that stuff, could mm-hmm. be really, really game-changing for us. That's the way that I sort of say it.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, in order to get to that stage, because there will be a whole bunch of – so organisations need to – and individuals like yourself can help organisations on that path to – learn about power skills and make those an integral part of their maybe development and hiring practices, I would say.
Absolutely. And think always thinking of that in the context of the changes, the evolving, you know, what's happening, because that's really, really important too.
Okay. So let's take a look again then at the individuals. So for individuals looking to proactively enhance their own power skills, what strategies or resources would you recommend there? So focused a little bit on organizations. So now we'll take a look at the individuals.
Yeah, look, I think in the first really important part is just awareness. And, mm-hmm. and you know, when I talk about and look, I'm talking about this growth cave, you know, as an organization, you know, we do these things obviously, you know, I'm mm-hmm. just saying that, but I'm not just saying go to growth cave. Uh-huh. I think the first thing I would say is you need to sit down and really ask yourself quite honestly, from a personal perspective in your own kind of work. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you believe the development of these power skills could actually really make a difference to you? And it might be, you may not even be worried about your job, or you may not even think that you're at the moment that you're under any threat, or that you're not operating at the level you should be. But the point about all of this, it's a proactive way of you making sure that other side of your skill set, not just the technical job knowledge side, but the other side of your skill set is being attended to, you know, you're actually thinking about. Okay. And if you then got to that point and you've thought about that, that's then you would go out and you would consider, all right, what are the options that I've got here? You know, am I talking here about, it's probably a bit different for people in large organizations because they mm-hmm. have the option perhaps of going on courses provided by their company or organization. But for individuals, a lot of that is going to be sort of self-education or enrolling in courses that you seek out, which you believe are actually in line with those kinds of power skills.
Yeah. Okay. Is there some type of compendium or I'm going to put you on the spot here. Is there like a if anybody wants to, you know, delve into the topic and read a little bit about the topic, yeah. is there something that you could, are these five power skills, question that I forgot to ask at the beginning, are these five power skills what you've identified, or is it within your circle of expertise, a statement that everybody identifies with the same, or these
I'm not going to say I just invented them, you know. Like,
I didn't want to go that far, but you know what I'm saying. It's like,
there's no creativity until I've thought of it, you know. No. I think it's more what I've done is distill down what I've considered to be some of the key areas and the key things that are important. I've tried to distill a bit of this on my website in terms of mm-hmm. some of the areas that I cover. Mm-hmm. You know, but there are some of the emotional intelligence in particular. You know, mm-hmm. there is some good material out there. I mean, I'm a Genos accredited emotional intelligence facilitator. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff that I recommend to people is the first couple of books by Daniel Goleman on emotional intelligence, which are really, really good and which in fact do cover quite a lot of stuff on the other power skills as well. You know,
okay.
if you read through. That would be somewhere that I'd actually probably start. There isn't a book out there on power skills per se, you know, like it's not,
okay.
not sort of.
So key takeaway for our podcast listeners that will help them in their daily life would be if you want to, for individuals, would be, for example, to either look you up, of course, then there's that direct link, as the same goes for companies. And your recommendation for books was Daniel Bolan, is that correct?
Daniel Goleman.
Goleman, okay.
I've got to remember, Goleman.
Okay, that was, and the title is Emotional Intelligence.
That's correct. Yeah, and the other one I would suggest people look up also is Genos. They're mm-hmm. Genos. They're an Australian based company, and they have actually developed emotional competencies, which are very in line with a lot of the power skills. They're not exactly the same, but they're in line with those. And I don't mention that because I can facilitate their instruments. It's also because I think that they distill it down really well.
Okay.
So I think there are a couple of good places to look. Yeah. Yeah.
And for organizations, what would you recommend if they want to look at this top? Would you recommend the same thing for organizations, or, you know, I guess organization is a little bit of a large topic. In essence, you're speaking to those individuals that are either in the HR department, particularly, or leadership individuals, management individuals that need to take this topic up for themselves and then basically bring it into their organization, correct?
I think that's right. I mean, I think what I said for the individual would work for people within organizations too.
Okay.
Look, there'll always be, there are a lot of programs out there, particularly in the EI area. There's a lot of people developing a lot of different programs and delivering them. Mm-hmm. And some of those, like Genus, for example, do a lot of work with large organizations. They're geared towards that too. You know, so they are very much, in the forefront of that kind of thing. I'm not a shareholder in Genos or anything like that. So I'm not trying to, I have an association with them, but it's not like that. Yeah. I think there are a lot of providers out there, Kenny, but I think you've got to be clear about what you believe in terms of the power skills, what it is that you believe you need to develop in.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be on an organizational level as well. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, go off and actually consider, all right, what would be the next steps in terms of, acquiring better knowledge on it. And look, obviously, Growth Cave, we do quite a lot of work in these areas too, We've got a fair bit of expertise. We've got some really good associates that we work with as well that assist in this process. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So for all listeners out there, you can either then reach out to Matthew at Growth Cave or follow one of his recommendations on his book. So I think any path that you choose is a good one because you'll basically be delving into more information on the topic and to see how these, five power skills that we just addressed, basically how that, power or the soft skill, however you want to call it, and how that in our, age of AI or upcoming age of AI, how that, still gives you a position of uniqueness and allows you to differentiate and see what strengths you have. So there's no, we can say actually one should not fear AI in such a manner.
Exactly what I was going to say, Kenny. Don't be scared of it. Yeah. Think about what you can do with it. It's the old story. We're never going to beat it. We don't, and maybe we do have to join it, but we join it in our own way as human beings.
Okay, cool. Then, Matthew, thank you very much for your time and thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your wealth of information. It was very, very much, very enjoyable for me. And once again, the biggest thing I think for any listener is if you, come out of this whole discussion with a little bit more knowledge than you went in, I think then it was time well spent and positive. Like I said, I think the discussion on the five power skills, I found it highly interesting and something that I'll have to look into. And off topic, Matthew also introduced me to the topic of getting up early and meditating.
Yeah, I should mention that's not an official part of Growth Cave service. It's just me.
As I say, off topic. So I've learned a little bit today because in the warm up discussion, Matthew and I discussed a little bit about meditation and so forth. But I think it finds its place here because once again, you're getting in touch with yourself. So I think that might also be a good facilitator in that case. So as always, if you like the podcast, smash the like button or even better, subscribe. Thanks again for listening. We'll hear you next time with The Learning Curve with me, Kenny. Thanks.
This podcast is released once a month and presented to you by IMC Learning. I'm your host, Kenneth Littlepage. Editorial planning and script by Simon Breslaw and Vanessa Klaes. Post-production and design, Lars Knuck.